everyone, welcome to One Shared Brain Cell. I am Fiona from the Spare Room, and I'm joined by Rich Newell up of the Tarantula family.
Hi.
And this week we are joined by the amazing MZ. She is from Invert, so on Instagram, Invert_tea_party, but on TikTok is Invert Tea Party, and the T in Tea Party is the letter, like for tarantulas, it's inspired.
Ace. And we'll post links as well.
We'll put links and things. Yeah, but we delayed recording for about a couple minutes because I was too busy scrolling TikTok.
Scrolling TikTok.
Oh, should we be, mate?
Yes.
Got any news this week?
No.
Any news this week, Emily?
News in terms of animals or just life?
I mean, don't treat this like a therapy session because our listeners aren't qualified. But, like, definitely love to hear some news, like, animal news.
Sure. I think the main news is just, like, I've just been doing some more, like, animal maintenance and rehousings. I got a lot of attitude from my lovely brachypelma albiceps, who made the rehousing a lot harder than all the old worlds I rehoused. So that was interesting. And
that's pretty surprising.
You say harder, do you mean more fun?
Yeah, I guess it depends on your definition of fun. More enjoyable for viewers.
So how long have you been into invert keeping then, and sort of, I guess, exotic pet keeping? How long have you been in the hobby?
So, I mean, unofficially since I was 2 years old. So basically, when I was two, I saw a lovely brachypelma smithy in a Zurich zoo, and 2 year old me just absolutely fell in love with her. I didn't care about the penguins or any of the other animals. This tarantula was just the best thing I'd ever seen. And for many, many years, I had a photo of her in my room growing up. And of course, I begged my parents to get me a tarantula, but they said no. So I just sort of continued learning about them as I grew older. And eventually, when I think I was in primary school or just secondary school, I got into stick insects because my parents for some reason would let me keep those and not tarantulas. Right. And then since then it just sort of grew, and as soon as I was able to move out, I literally just started my own collection and made my dream come true. And I just genuinely find them the most fascinating animal on this planet. Like there's nothing about them I don't enjoy. So I guess officially I've been keeping them probably 4 years now, around there, but I've literally researched them since I was 2 years old and
in the community
worked with inverts. Exactly.
So you did it the other way around to a lot of people then. You did all the research and knowledge first and then got one, whereas a lot of people get one and then do all the research and knowledge.
Exactly. And to be honest, it really aggravates me when people get an animal without doing the research first, because at the end of the day, you know, it's a lovely little living creature, and if you're not going to take care of it or you don't know what it needs, then you shouldn't have it. So I think it definitely put me in a strong position when I got my first tarantula, but he still gave me a heart attack when he sealed himself away for about 6 months. I mean, and I do still panic sometimes now, even though I know they do that for pre-molt. So you definitely do continue learning as you continue your journey. And I think you'll always be learning because different species have different traits. I'm sure different individuals as well have different personalities and, you know, quirks. So it's good to have the base knowledge and not just jump into it blindly. But again, I just love that I'm still learning.
So your first tarantula, was it a brachypelma smithy or hamori?
So when I first wanted to get into it, I wasn't able to find a smithy. But obviously there's a lot of similarities between the hamori and the smithy. So I just sort of went to the local exotic store, saw what they had, and I saw this lovely little juvenile hamori, and I was like, right, that's the one. I was so nervous when I brought him home. Obviously I didn't know at the time it was a male, but I remember that night, I don't think I slept. I just kept thinking, is he okay? Is he comfortable? Has he slept well? You know, just worrying. But like that then started that journey of you know what, I want to study them. Like, I have them, you know, there's different species, different traits, and I love the colors. And I think that's what led to me getting so many. It wasn't about, you know, trying to collect them all, as people sort of jokingly say, it's like Pokemon, got to catch them all. It's for me, it's always sort of been that learning and studying, because I think I'm secretly like a mad biologist. So it's, it made me interested in trying to get some arboreals, fossorials, you know, old world, sort of expand as I got more confidence.
It is amazing if you have the like the ability to experience like a bit of everything. Like you said, like arboreal, fossorial, you know, an old world, new world. Like, it's really nice if you can get a bit of everything.
Yeah, they do add different dimensions, really welcome dimensions to any sort of pet family, don't they?
Definitely. And and you're so right about the individuals as well. Like, I was talking to someone yesterday about their Chromatopelma cyanupubescens. Theirs is so spicy and has such an attitude. But mine, when she was alive, she was the calmest, most chilled, relaxed tarantula you've ever like come across. She was just like vibing at all times, and it's just it's amazing, like, to see the differences between like similar species. Like, no one, you know, people say they don't have personalities, but they clearly do to an extent, otherwise they'd all act the same. So yeah, it's just it's really cool.
I think I've been lucky. I don't think I've ever really had a truly spicy tarantula.
No, I can't think of any of yours that were aggy.
No, I think it's been really lucky that they haven't been. Yeah.
My most aggy tarantulas have been New World, you know.
Same.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Pamphobeta springs to mind. Good Lord above.
For me, it's my Agen. So.
Oh, yeah.
I brought her as a sub-adult from, like, one of the invert shows, and I just think they're so beautiful. She was pretty calm, you know, on the journey home. As soon as we tried to take her out and rehouse her, like, normally they give you sort of a warning that they will try and bite. You know, they might flick some hairs, or, you know, the body language, they'll give you that. She went straight for a bite on that paintbrush.
Oh,
and
really?
I was like, oh, so you bite first and ask questions later. Good to know.
Yeah.
She hasn't changed even after quite a few years.
Do you know what I found really interesting about my Agenic is I always kept it. She was in a flat faunarium, but the really, really big ones, the extra large ones. And she had paired her, and I could tell she was gravid. So I was like, right, I'm going to move her into a 30 by 30 Exoterra cube. So she can have the egg sac safely and stuff like that. And this was at the beginning of her being gravid. Like, we had like 6 months to go, you know, a long time to go before she laid it. And so I put her in there, and she was just so stressed. And I was like, maybe she's just getting used to it. Left it a month. No, she's just really stressed. She's not eating. She's, you know, she's not going underground. She's not displaying her usual like attitude or anything like that. And she's just always, you know, when they pull their legs over their eyes to hide, just always doing that. And I was like, this is just not like her. And then I was like, oh, maybe she just hates the enclosure. And I was like, no, it's not gonna be that. Put her back in the faunarium, back to normal straight away.
That is funny, isn't it? Yeah,
it is. But again, displays that they definitely have personalities.
Do you think they can change personalities between molts, after molts?
I've heard stories of it happening to people, but I haven't seen mine. Like with Dolly, my agent, she molted and she's still exactly the same. You know, she's still spicy. Even with like my curly hair, he's always been quite skittish. But then as soon as you sort of tap his back leg, he moves quite slowly. But I haven't personally seen it. I don't know if you guys have had that with any of yours.
I noticed that Flo seems to be a lot more wandery. She seems to have a lot more wanderlust after this last molt.
Yeah.
Because she was always just a pet rock, but this time she's been like all over the place. I find her sort of upside down on the lid sort of thing. It's like, it's really strange.
She used to be in a burrow a lot, didn't
she? Yeah. I was going to say earlier on when you were saying about when you first get your tea and you have to get used to them disappearing for 6 months. I think that's one of the most common binding experiences of all keepers. When they first experience their tarantula disappearing for 6 months, it's one of those things that we've all been through.
Usually when we get a bunch of new ones.
Yeah, you just don't see them, yeah.
Honestly, like, I recently got a C. natanicarum, however you pronounce it, the electric blue.
Yeah.
an OBT, and what's the third one? Oh yeah, the Ibrapora diversipes. Again, butchering the Latin names here, but literally the Sina Natanicarum, however you pronounce it, it's just like buried itself, done some webbing. Yeah. I barely ever see it. And I'm like, please, I just want to see you, but I want to know you're okay.
Yeah. And
I was actually convinced for a few days that, because it was quite fast, that maybe it never made it into the enclosure, like when I was rehousing. So, but then I did eventually see it, so it was okay. But it did scare me for a while.
Did it disappear straight away, or did you have those 2 days where you were lulled into thinking, actually, it's not going to hide after all? Because I got my C. lividum recently, or C. lividus, whichever one.
Yeah.
For the first couple of days, it was out, and I was like, oh, maybe it's not going to be so bad. I might actually see this regularly after all. And then never saw it since.
I have that paranoia with a Peloctinus hematostoma from Jeremy Redfang. Not a spider you want to get bitten by, let's put it like that. And I thought that had escaped.
Where was it?
It burrowed, which is really weird. I don't know to this day whether it is escaped or not, but it doesn't matter because I don't live in that house anymore.
That's very true.
No, it definitely didn't escape. It was a little sling, and I think unfortunately it passed away and I didn't notice in time. But yeah, I've had that fear before. It wasn't my first old will, but I got an OBT, and it was so fast. Like, I had it in, I'd basically put air holes in a clip lock big Tupperware, and I was just like, and I would get up in the middle of the night and check it was still there, sling, mind. It would have died within hours, but I was like, oh my God, this thing's going to grow up and it's going to bite my cat and it's going to kill my cat.
Is that what you call an old world jail or something? You put it in OBT jail or something?
Yes. Oh my God, old world prison. I forgot about that. Yeah, so old world prison was a big tub that had no air holes in it, but it was huge, so there was more than enough oxygen in there. And if I was ever worried about a tarantula escaping, I would put it in jail, in prison, and then basically monitor it for a couple of days and just make sure that it didn't.
Emsie, have you developed any techniques that you think are useful, that you've developed that you use?
That's a very cool question. To be honest, like, I think just when rehousing, sort of the more touchy tarantulas, just that bottle method of where, you know, you get a plastic bottle, cut off the end, and then be able to unscrew that. Because to be honest, it's not even for the fast ones. I found it for like the more stubborn species. So my M. robustum, when I rehoused her, like, she just refused to move. She held her ground, and I was literally putting all my weight into nudging her and she was not moving. I was like, oh my gosh, okay, what do I do? So eventually I just had to literally do the bottle method. So for me, that is definitely like a go-to trick now. And just even ensuring that they've got a piece of cork bark or something, because I find when you're sort of nudging them to rehouse them, if they just feel the substrate, sometimes they don't want to like move from their old enclosure. But if they can feel like, you know, something that's familiar, like the cork bark, they're more likely to go. So, like, I guess that's some of, like, my little tricks and stuff. But
good idea.
So if they can take the cork bark with them.
Yeah.
Glide on the cork bark,
That's always a nice and easy rehousing. The other one that I love as well, which is probably not very genius or anything, but when I'm feeding, you know, the little fruit flies, I just get a little paintbrush and then I just like scoop a few up on the paintbrush and just tap them into the little sling pots. And I just find that works so much faster and it just really works for me. But again, I'm sure that's not like an unusual method. So
it sounds helpful.
Yeah.
All those little things are really helpful. I think. Yeah. Those little tips and hints.
The bottle one is so good. I remember, I think I got that from like Dark then.
Nice.
Years and years ago, it's so useful. Although, do you know what? I haven't had to feed fruit flies in a long time, and I forgot how much I hate those.
I've never had to feed fruit flies.
Never.
No, I've never had anything. I'd either cut up something small and then leave it in there, or I'd never fed fruit flies.
Oh, they were the worst. Oh.
And also, as well, because when you think about jumping spiders, it's amazing what they can take down.
Oh, yeah, they can take down things.
They are monstrous, aren't they? They're monstrous feeders, so they'll just take anything down,
I have a love-hate relationship with jumping spiders because I honestly find them the cutest thing ever. But I refuse to own one because of their short lifespan.
Yeah,
I would just get way too attached and way too heartbroken. And I just don't think I can bring myself to do it. Although I would absolutely love to have one, and I'll see them at all the shows and see the pictures online. And I'm like, please, I want one. Yeah. But just live for the same amount of time as a tarantula, please.
That would be amazing. Can you imagine a 10-year-old jumping spider?
That was the first time I cried as an adult pet owner. The jumping spider.
Oh no! Yeah, Greg
died. Yeah, because I was chatting to you at the same time as I was chatting to Christina, Dee Dee the jumping spider.
Yeah,
and she was telling me about what to expect, what to experience, and what are they doing, and how are they looking now. And I was sort of going through it, and it was like I really knew the end was coming up, and it's devastated, absolutely devastated.
Yeah. It was like that with my first jumping spider, Euphrosyne, because she had 3 egg sacs, and then because she was pretty old when she got pregnant anyway, she got pregnant. And then, you see the warning signs, like they're on the ground, they're not.
Can't climb so much.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, my baby.
It is,
heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Same with the mature males, I find as well. Like, I've been lucky, I've only had. So technically 3 mature males, 2 of them I still have. But it's really, you have that dilemma of, do I send them off to breed so that they get that opportunity? Or do I just sort of keep them safe and watch them slowly wither away?
Mm.
And I'm really stuck on what to do with my curly hairs because I've actually got 3 curly hairs, which just sort of happened. I had one initially who matured. So I thought, you know what, just in case he runs out and, you know, I sort of lose him soon, I want to have a curly hair because I think they're a beautiful species. Mm,
they are,
I just love, they're like little teddy bears.
Underrated.
They really are. I genuinely think they are a must-have for the tarantula keepers.
Yeah, if I had the space, I'd have a curly hair in a heartbeat again. They are just like little puppy dogs.
They really are, And they're like, they are one of the, I think... in the same way that the Jeep Hawker is, they are the typical tarantula, aren't they?
Like a staple.
They're like a sort of...
Like a red
knee. If you see one, you know you're looking at a tarantula,
100%. And, like, that's why I was like, I have to just get a female. So I ordered, like, a sub-adult female, and she arrived. And I was like, yay, you're going to be called Tiana, because then I've got Tiki, so Tiki and Tiana.
Aww.
Literally... few weeks later, matured into a male.
No way.
And I was like, there's now Tiano. So obviously I contacted the seller and was just like, hey, look, this has turned into mature male. Please could you send me a female? Because that's obviously what I paid for. So they kindly sent me a replacement. So now I've got 3 and she does seem like a female. So
that's good. That's good service.
It happens, isn't it?
Honestly, they were fantastic. I feel like I'm trying to think like the name of the company now. I don't know if I can say it or not. Like,
you can cut it, but I am nosy and I want to know.
Fair enough. But to be fair, they deserve a shout out. But Bugnut, they were really, really good.
They're great. I love them.
Honestly,
they're awesome.
I've heard of them, but I don't.
They're not a big seller like Spider Shop or Creatures from the North. But, like, they have a really good range, but they're also not very expensive. But then you get some cool shit. I got my Panda Kings from there.
I used to watch a chap on YouTube.
Bug Hut.
And I think that's why I always get confused.
I bought a sex female. Actually, we were talking about this literally an hour ago. I bought a sex female tea vegans. And then a couple months later, he matured, and I was just like, is what it is, isn't it?
On the subject of buying tarantulas, even from respectable sellers, what's your thoughts on wild caught and captive bred?
I hate wild caught. I hate it. I hate it so much. If I see, I could have like my number one bucket list tarantula be on a website for 50p. If I see wild caught, I won't buy it.
Yeah, same.
I don't care if I'm just one. I'm not saying this to like, I'm not virtue signaling. I just absolutely hate it. We have enough diversity in tarantulas in the UK where wild caught. See, though, I had a really interesting discussion, and I think it was with Jeremy, and he doesn't support wild caught, obviously. But he said, you've got to think of the economics of it as well, because a lot of like wild caught animals come from, if you think about it, geographical areas that are in economic distress, let's say. So like you'll get a lot of like tarantulas like from West Africa, from Mexico, from the poorer parts of Asia, for example. And he said you've got to think about the wild caught industry actually gives a lot of people income out there, because he said like things like the electric blue, oh, I can't remember, Manticorum, whatever it's been described as now, they are in absolute abundance where they are. People will see like just everywhere, and it's, but over here it's like super rare tarantula and it's very exciting to have. So it's difficult for me to say like I don't support wild caught when then I think about how many people have a job because of it, but at its core I don't like it.
For me personally, I only support captive bred. Like, I think there's too many cons of wild caught. For example, I don't like the concept that this poor animal is being ripped out of its home, and then they get shipped, you know, across the world in not very nice conditions, and actually there's a high mortality rate for those animals. So I really don't like that sort of ethical side of it. And then also there's a big risk as well of introducing, you know, sort of foreign parasites and like mites and things like that into your own collection, even if you do quarantine that tarantula. So for me, that's like another big reason not to. And again, I think like Fee, what you were saying earlier, like we already have so much great diversity here in the UK that there isn't that much need. And I think if it really came down to it, I'd only really support it if it was like, say for like conservation purposes, and we needed to like, I don't know, take a certain species from its home country to try and like increase the numbers over here or something, then I could see like a good reason for it. But otherwise I really can't justify supporting it. And you can probably see behind me with my collection, I have a lot of slings, because it is harder obviously to buy full grown tarantulas, especially if they are captive bred, because they're just so expensive.
That's very true.
So going back about 2.5 years ago, there was a seller who brought in a bunch of wild caught Heteropoda David Bowies, I think, but all the females came in gravid, but they didn't know. So they were selling these adult females, and then people were getting them and they were laying egg sacs, and people, like, they were selling them to people that just did not have the knowledge at all. I think the seller actually ended up buying a few of the egg sacs, and then they resold them, which was nice. But how do you feel about this aspect of wild caught? So let's think of, I think it's pronounced Tascinus bambus.
Oh, right, yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. People were paying like £200-300 for the females when they were first coming up. Ridiculous, anyway. So they, I think, what was that, about 18 months ago? That came into the UK, right? Got classified. It was something else, but it got classified. And people were like, right, I need this tarantula right now. And it was at the hot tarantula. Would you support wild catching a couple of sexed pairs in order to introduce them to the hobby, so that there aren't more taken for the wild in the future?
Oh, that's a very good question. I think in that situation I would as well, because you're almost doing it for the greater good. Because if you don't sort of establish that captive bred population, then someone else will, or they'll continue to grab them from the wild. So I think like, in, it is hard, isn't it? Because obviously, technically every tarantula, because they're not native to here, they will have come from a wild caught pair at some point. And that's obviously where the moral lines get blurred a little bit. Yeah. So I think in that situation, I would, and I would keep them separate from my own collection. So there wasn't any risk of, like, you know, diseases, parasites or anything like that. I think in a way it would be quite exciting saying, you know what, this is a new project. Let's try and give more people access to the species. But it is a tricky one, I think, because still, I think in the back of my mind, I'd be thinking, these poor tarantulas have just been ripped from their native habitat, shipped across the world, and now they're living under my roof in a little box. You know, it's very different. So I think there's a fine balance, isn't there? And I think at the end of the day, the most important thing is the animal's welfare and, like, you know, the ethics behind it.
Yeah, like, there was, I was just checking the species name while I was listening to you, and Bristol Zoo and Longleat, Bristol before it closed, I'm pretty sure they were keepers, they're still continuing it though. There was a desertus wolf spider that they were doing as part of their conservation, like, it's wildly endangered, this animal, and they took a few from the wild in order then to release back, which I think is lovely. But yeah, in terms of the...
That's great.
Yeah, for the sake of conservation, just it's wonderful. But yeah, to introduce it to the hobby, because humans are by nature just very selfish and destructive, I don't think there's an issue with that.
Do you think there's enough? Well, I mean, not everyone's going to have access to smuggled tarantulas, but do you think there's enough? I think there's a suitable amount of monitoring of who can breed tarantulas.
No. It's like reptiles. Reptiles are massively overbred.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's that much of a significant problem. Like, for example, in the US, I haven't heard anything bad about arachnid breeding, but for example, people in the US breed reptiles quite, not unethically, obviously, but the word I'm looking for is, like, basically.
Recklessly?
Yeah, yeah. And then, you know, you've got, for example, you've got berms and retics in the Everglades now, and they're absolutely...
Oh, yeah.
And absolutely, like, devastating wildlife and things like that. And then, you know, when you're hearing more frequently on the news now in the UK about large snakes escaping and things.
Yeah.
And it would be such a shame for the hobby to take the direction that the US has, because they have taken a hard line with it, and like we've seen, you know, with there was a horrendous culling about a year and a half ago that was absolutely sickening to watch. It really affected me for quite a time anyway, but you don't hear about that really with tarantulas. I don't hear about it. I've heard about two escaped tarantulas ever in my There was one in Cardiff that escaped when I was younger, and my mum is so scared of tarantulas that she would, like, shut the car vents, despite the fact that we were, like, driving on the other side of Cardiff, just in case a spider had, like, somehow got into her engine and into her vents.
This isn't Australia.
I know. Yeah. And then the other one was, like, recently in Cardiff, someone posted a picture. It was so funny, of a mature male curly hair on their kitchen counter. And the caption was something like, "Has anyone lost a tarantula? It's in my house." It was so funny. And like, so someone who was like, who had her tarantulas just came and collected him. But yeah, that's the only time.
Yeah. Wasn't there one on a bin somewhere in a park?
Was there?
Yeah, I'm sure I saw a story about someone who was in a park and there was a big tarantula on a bin.
Yeah, I feel like I remember that, because wasn't it like a poor tarantula who'd been abandoned, and then...
I think so, yeah. Well, yeah, people dump tarantulas in boxes just like in their bibs on by the side of the road. Yeah.
It's so sad. Like, there's so many great rescues out there where you can, you know, say you can't take care of them anymore. You know, there's so many avenues. You don't have to just chuck them on the side of the road.
But, like, people are just shit, though, aren't they?
People are shit,
They would rather have that animal die in absolute distress than have a little bit of shame about going, look, I can't look after this animal anymore.
I don't think they're genuine community members. Because anybody in the community would go, oh, I've got a couple of teas that I need rehoming. Anybody interested?
Yeah,
exactly.
Can anybody take them on? And somebody in the community will go, oh, yeah, I can do that, definitely.
Do you know what, though, like, as well, your absolute, like, worst case scenario, you can walk into any exotic reptile shop and go, here you go, bye.
And like, that would be a shitty thing to do to them, but like, they would take care of it. But you know, leaving an animal, you know, it's like when all those floods were happening in America, in Florida, people were leaving dogs chained up to fences on the side of the road. Like, what is wrong with you?
Yeah, I know. Honestly, it's because of because of people. I think that's partly where like my passion for these creatures has come from. Like, I've always wanted to be a voice for the unloved, almost, you know, because people fear these creatures, they fear inverts, they fear reptiles. So there's always been that part of me that wanted to defend them. Mm. But then also, like, my dream is to help as many animals as I can. So currently a lot of my animals are rescues. So like my royal python, he's a rescue. My African fat-tailed gecko is a rescue. My African bullfrog as well, my two dogs. And actually my Samphink Bellita, she was dumped at a local pet store. And it was just by chance that I came across her. So she's called Lucky, and she, we just go to this pet store every now and then to pick up dog treats. And occasionally they'll have like maybe two or three slings, like it's a very small shop. So I'll go over and have a little look, and it's usually a very common species, so I don't usually buy anything. And I was just sort of chatting to the people while paying, and I was, oh yeah, I always love to come in here, you know, to look at your tarantula collection. And they said, oh, did you see our big one? I was like, no. And they basically explained that someone had taken this tarantula from, it was like one of those I'm a Celebrity, Get Out of Me, I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, that's the one.
Sounds like an exorcism.
But it's like an I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here experience. And this poor, you know, LP, she'd been used as like a fear factor, so basically scaring people, and she was so stressed. And then someone kindly removed her from that situation. Apparently he just sort of stole her, but then he couldn't look after her. So he then dumped her at that store, and they didn't know what to do with her. She was in a really tiny, like an adult LP in like this tiny box with like a, they did their best, bless them, because they did say they were scared of her. And she was very grumpy, and you could tell she'd been kicking hair. She was in pre-molt, and they chucked like four locusts in there, and they were stressing her. So I was like, me and my partner, we just looked at each other, and bearing in mind my partner, he's arachnophobic. we just looked at each other like, we're taking this tarantula because she needs a home. And the pet store were very kind. They literally just charged us for like the equipment she came with. So we rehoused her, and you know, she's now in a really big ExoTerra living life. She's no longer stressed, and she's so sweet. Like, she comes over to the glass if I'm there to almost like investigate.
That's amazing. But, like, that's the way to do it, though. That's a fantastic way to do it. Yeah.
It just like, it breaks my heart that she had to go through that, because if she was already an adult, and does that mean she spent her whole life being used for this I'm a Celebrity thing? Like, that must be so stressful, because as you guys know, tarantulas don't enjoy being handled. They don't enjoy loud screaming noises or heavy vibrations. So that must be
shouting at them.
So weirdly, I also had a tarantula called Lucky who was a rescue. It was a six-legged piece of theria regalis who had eight legs in it.
The only pink salmon birdie tour I've had was when I was working on I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, but somebody pinched it.
Was she called Lucky?
That's terrible, isn't it?
But no, I also, I think one of my most interesting tarantulas was also, I say rescue because again, it had been dumped at a store, but she's technically a hybrid.
I saw pictures,
So we don't, she's a mix of two Brachypelmas, we think. She's called Ember, and she now looks a bit more like a Smithy. But when we first got her, she looked more like a Boamai crossed with an Albiceps.
She had amazing colouring, I thought. It's very...
She's like quite bright orange. I think it was one of the first pictures on my Instagram.
Ember. Oh, I see what you mean.
So the shop just basically said, like, the shopkeeper, he's amazing. It's, I think it's called Snakes and Ladders or Snakes and Adders in Sheffield. It's a really great little exotic shop. but I saw that they had like a box labeled hybrid. So obviously I was curious. I was like, oh, like, what's this a hybrid of? And he's, oh, well, we think of Brachypelma, but we can't do anything with it because you can't sell it because someone irresponsible might breed her. And I was like, I was actually thinking, right, I'll take her, give her a good life. I don't want to breed her, you know. So I just said, how much do you want for her? It's like, oh, you can have her. I was like, oh, really?
Wow. Amazing. So
he just said, because, you know, he technically couldn't sell her and someone had just dumped her there. Like, he was like, just take her.
Yeah.
And she amazing. Is amazing. Like, she changed so much after her molt.
I think she's a smithy.
Like, she looks like she's mostly a smithy now. But then there's also a few elements that she's not like as black on the markings as she should be. So I think there's definitely smithy in there somewhere.
Because I remember when I was doing, because I did like a bit of research on like the actual differences, and it seemed like the main difference was the carapace. So it was less black on the smithy.
Yeah.
And she has a lot less, like if you compare that Ember and then that is the first
baby tea.
Yeah.
Is she actually called baby tea?
Yeah, he's my first one. So I named him baby tea.
You see, like the difference in the carapace.
Yeah.
Oh,
your trenches are beautiful. Yeah. Who is Sunny? Is he a summer pay? I knew he'd be a summer payers always.
Yeah. Sunny is very reclusive. I don't see Sunny that often.
Oh.
But Sunny's quite chilled for a Salmopeus because they can be a little bit spicy sometimes. But I mean,
they can be bolters, can't they? They can be those, you know, that fantastic thing they do where they bolt really quickly and then stand still somewhere else.
Yeah. Oh yeah, like teleport.
yeah, that's it. Yeah, I think they're well known for that. I think
they're my favorite genus. If I had to keep one genus for the rest of my life, it'd be Salmopeus. Easy.
Oh wow, what is it you like about them?
They're just beautiful. They're absolutely beautiful. Like, and their genus is so diverse, like in the way that they look. So you've got like the Salmopeus, which is like black, and then you've got these amazing like orange go faster stripes, and then you've got the little like tufts of orange on their paws, and then but then you've got like a Pulca, which is like almost gold, and then you've got the Victory. Victoria is my favorite tarantula on earth, and you've got the black and the red, and then oh my god, I could literally go on about this genus all day.
Oh, it's lovely to have that passion though. And it's funny because I used to always say that Brachypelma will always be my favorite genus, like it just will be, but the more I keep, I actually think like just baboons in general are becoming my favorites. And I never thought I'd be saying that, especially not about any old world tarantula. Because I used to always be like, when I started, oh no, I don't want anything that defensive. But my goodness, the H. pulchripes is the most beautiful tarantula. Like,
absolutely stunning,
Even OBTs, you know?
Mm. Oh, OBTs are definitely underrated, I think. Yeah.
OBTs, oh my god, And they come in bloody every colour you can imagine.
Yeah. And they've got a terribly unwanted, unwarranted reputation.
Massively unwarranted. Yeah. Do you know what I love? My favourite, what's your favourite? So, Harpacteria pulchripe, so I'm trying to remember. That's your favourite baboon. My favourite baboon is the Lugardi.
They're underrated as well.
Oh my god, they're just breathtaking. They look like, you know, when you see like an adult female Hedroscoda maculata, and they just like the white with the black markings is just, it's really striking. And I find that with the female Lugardis, you get this almost like this grey gold beige, and then you've got these beautiful markings on it. It's just beautiful tarantula, amazing. Sorry.
No, that's fine.
I just
love the passion.
Passion away, my friend. I was always an OBT kind of guy, just because I thought they were pretty, and you get to know them and you realise how bad their reputation is.
Yeah.
But recently, I've developed a sort of real interest in, I can't remember the scientific name because I'm old, rare horned baboons. And the like.
Marshalli or the Darlingi? The Serrano?
Darlingi,
Again, beautiful. Oh my god, I love Darlingis.
Yeah. Marshalli. Gyrus.
Serrato. however, one of those.
I love that we all say it completely different. Yeah. Do you know what?
Keratigious.
Oh, that's fancy. That's probably more accurate, you know, because in Latin, I believe they pronounce C's as a hard K.
Yeah.
I kept the darlingy. I kept a couple, actually. I kept juveniles, and I had an adult female who was really old when she came to me, and then she dropped one of her legs one day and died, which was, like, annoying. But she was beautiful. I've never kept, right, here's a little fun fact. I've never kept a Marshali because the length of the horn makes me feel sick. Like, I can't look at them.
Oh no!
I literally don't know what it is. Like, it's bizarre because, like, the Darlingy doesn't bother me, but obviously the Mashali's horn is much bigger. But when I see it, they actually make me feel nauseous.
Do you know what, like, gets me sometimes? So I don't know if you guys have done this, or maybe I'm just a massive weirdo for doing it. But, like, with my bigger specimens of tarantulas, I'll just sort of stare at their eyes, and then I'll start imagining them if they were bigger. And then it starts freaking me out, thinking that it's just, like, these big black eyes staring at me. And, like, then I start freaking myself out. And I'm like, oh, my God, I have to stop looking at this now. It's just really weird. But, like, the more I think about it, I'm like, that's kind of off-putting. And then I looked at my, like, black Pomeranian one day, and she's got quite, like, small brown eyes. And I imagined her with, like, black tarantula eyes. And I was like, I can't look at you anymore.
Can you imagine them all blink in one go? Oh no.
Oh, it's amazing what our minds can do to things we love.
Honestly.
Yeah. I mean, the thing that fascinates me the most about their eyes is obviously they've got so many, but they don't see very well. It's like, yeah. We assume from studies, you know, it's the light or the dark. So, for example, if, like, a bird in the wild swooped over, they'd see the shadow and run away and hide. But, like, imagine if they could see colours and shapes like we can. How amazing would that be?
Yeah.
I saw a blind tarantula, didn't I? Baby.
Oh, I didn't know.
Yeah, my Nandu Trepethi, who, I talk about this a lot, but she passed away recently, but she was, like, 12. Like 10, between 10 and 12, but she passed away recently. She was, like, super old, and I think she molted by accident.
Oh, you were saying about that one, yeah.
She didn't have pre-molt, and then she just molted one day, and I think it finished her off. Anyway, I'm 100% confident she was completely blind, and I think she must have had, like, other sensory issues as well, because, like, a hopper would go past her, and it'd literally be like nothing happened. But then if I got the hopper and sort of, like, poked it, but you know what I mean, popped it by her mouth, she'd, like, straight away, she'd grab it and she'd eat. But yeah, she's a fun little
that's like our little brown buddy that almost, I would say now, completely blind.
Yeah,
but until the vet says, you know, she's having a terrible life, we just keep caring for her.
Mm-hmm. And
because she eats really well, and she'll just gobble everything up. So, you know, she's happy, basically. And she lives in her own, they've got their own room, but she lives in her own cage. It's about maybe 5 foot by 2 foot. And her water bowl's always in the same place. Her food's in the same place. And she'll sit right up against the edge. Mm. But the other day, I took her out just so she could play with her sister, because her sister's a big blonde bunny that is just aww, brilliant. So we have to clean their eyes ourselves now, because they don't clean each other's eyes because they're separated. So we have to sort of clean their eyes.
Is that how bunnies clean their eyes?
Yeah, they clean each other's eyes.
Social thing.
So the other day I took out Brown Bunny, put her on the floor, and she went running almost full speed and banged straight into Golden Bunny. Almost like she didn't know she was there.
It was
so sad. And it was like, oh, there you are.
Oh, bless her.
It's always hard seeing animals getting older. I think that is truly the hardest part of any animal keeping, or, like, obviously losing them in the end. But I guess then you just have to focus on the amazing life that you gave that animal and the joy that they gave you in return.
Yeah.
There's that saying, isn't there? Like, they are a part of your life, but you are their whole life.
Yeah, I was just thinking that. It's so true.
It is so true. Yeah. And, like, I think sometimes I try and be comforted, but particularly actually when it came to my jumping spiders, is that if a jumping spider makes it to 2, you've done a good job.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those things where, like, obviously, you know, it is never nice to lose an animal, but if you know that animal has lived or surpassed its expected age, I guess.
Yeah. Lifespan.
Lifespan, yeah. That's the word I was looking for. Then you can have comfort that it lived a lovely life.
Mm.
You know, like your buns, yeah. They're both really old.
Yeah, they're 12 this year.
That's amazing, yeah, a bunny.
It is.
I didn't even realise they could live that long.
Yeah, they've been so pampered, though, and they've wanted for nothing.
Yeah.
And they've never really been outside, so they haven't been subjected. And they were spayed really early as well. As soon as they could be spayed, they were, which I think prolongs life as well.
I saw their bunny room. They have quite literally got an entire room.
They have, yeah.
It's amazing. And, like, they just, like, hop around, and they're loving life. And like you said, they haven't wanted for everything. They got everything there.
And they get more now than they ever have. Because the theory is, well, do you know what? They're not as young as they used to be. They can have whatever they want because we don't know how long they've got left.
So just spoil them.
I love that. They honestly sound like they have the best life.
They really do, yeah. And they've never, well, Golden Bunny was quite cuddly when she was young. If I had nuggets, little treat nuggies, I was left on the sofa, she'd jump up on me and sit on me for the whole time I had nuggets. But if there was no food involved, it's like, she's like a cat, yeah. And she'd jump up on me, run up my chest, onto my shoulder, and on the back of the sofa, and sit there for a bit, and then run back down again. Oh my God, it's so lovely.
I have had the pleasure of meeting your buns on a few occasions. They are so cute.
I tried the other day to convince their bun mum to get two runner ducks. When the bunnies die, but she said
no. I love runner ducks.
Why?
Oh, your runner ducks are lush. And you know when somebody says no in a manner that you know is actually a no?
Yeah.
That was me and my partner the other day, because I really want the Sphinx cat. Like, I just think they're so beautiful. You know, the hairless ones?
Yeah.
And, like, my partner, he doesn't want a cat. And secondly, he said, if I am going to have a cat, it needs to have hair. But
do you know what, as well? Excuse me. Word.
That's fair enough, I think. I don't like to take sides, but yeah.
I feel betrayed.
sorry, yeah.
I think we'll change
that in the edit for solidarity.
Yeah. As well. And then someone says no to you and you know they're right, but you're like, oh,
yes.
I want you to say yes anyway. Like, basically, about 2 months ago, one of my family members, Nan, had taken a fall and broken her hips, and she had a sausage dog that was 18 months old, so really young, had the rest of his life ahead of it, and because she'd broken her hip, she couldn't, like, take it for walks as much as it needed or play with it and things like that. So my cousin said, look, hello family member that loves animals, would you like this dog? And I was like, and in my head, I was like, I really want this dog. Because me and Gaz want to get a dog one day, but just not right now. I said to Gaz, look, like, can we have this dog? And he was like, it's not really, like, the time, is it? Like, this is not wise. And I was like, even though he was right, and I knew he was right, I was like,
you actually really needed him to be sensible, so you could be fully justified in your, like, upsetness about it.
That's exactly what I needed, because I have no self-control. So, like, even though I know that now is not the time for a dog, I still would have I would have meddled. I mean, the dog would have got the best life ever, but I needed him to say no to me.
He's a damn fine man.
He is good boy.
Bless.
I wasn't allowed to have bunnies.
And now you're not allowed geese. What's going on?
Bun Mum has a son called Tom. Bun Mum is called Fiona. It gets confusing because there's, like, Fiona. What was Fiona number one and two? But that just seemed really insulting. But I said, can we get bunnies? And she said no. So I went to her son, who was about 20 at the time, and I said, how do you fancy getting some bunnies? And he was like, yeah, let's get bunnies. And as soon as he said to his mum, are we getting bunnies, mum? She was like, yeah, let's go and get some.
I love that you weaponized your own son.
Yeah. And funny enough, the other day when I said to her, oh, can we get runner ducks when the girls unfortunately pass away? And she said no. I said, well, I'm just going to ask Tom to get you to get some. And he doesn't even live at home anymore. Yes, seriously. He's not there anymore. If he said, "Oh, why don't you get some ducks for the garden?" She'd be like, "Right, let's go then." She'd be googling before he finished it.
On the go, printing out as he leaves. Running ducks. Oh, that would be lovely.
Yeah. If it makes you feel better, so. I initially, because my partner, he's arachnophobic, and we've been together 8 years now. When I first met him, you know, I did say to him, "Look, as soon as I get my own place, I'm getting a tarantula, by the way. I love tarantulas." And he was like, "Okay, I can live with that, but only one tarantula." So that was the agreement. And before you know it, I was begging him for a Gramstol Apulchra. I was like, "Look, I know you said only one, but this is like, you know how much I love them. It's different. It's like the puppy dog of the tarantula world. It'll be super chill." And it's like, "Oh, fine." So ended up getting my lovely little Gramstol Apulchra named Martini. And before you know it, I was in an exotic store, saw the curly hair, and I was like, "Oh, please, you know, this was the first time a tarantula I ever held. It's got special meaning." And since then, it's turned into 40 plus.
I love that for you.
I don't even ask anymore. Like, he also said no old worlds, and you know, suddenly I've got Asians, I've got Africans. They're just and he did ask me the other day, he goes, "Honey, why do we keep getting the dangerous tarantulas?" I was like, "What do you mean?" He's like, "You keep getting like all the old worlds." So I'm like, "They're fine." Like, it's fine.
You can only have one tarantula. You can only have one tarantula room.
Yeah, literally. And he said the same with the snakes. He was like, "Nope, you're not having a snake. I don't like snakes." And I sort of explained to him. I was like, "I really want a snake. Like, I held a royal python and it just calmed me down. It was the most amazing feeling. It would really help me with my mental health." And he was like, "Well, where would you put it?" I was like, "Okay, fine, good point. It needs a big enclosure." So I let off on that one. One day he comes to me and goes, "You know, we could probably put a new unit in the guest room and it could go in there." I was like, "I'll take you up on that. If you're saying that, that's a green light." And then before you know it, we've got two snakes.
I assume you were in the car on the way to the viv shop as soon as you said that. And,
before the end of the sentence, you already ordered a viv.
Oh,
I love as well that you've got a bull python and then a little baby snow hog nose. Like, they're so different. And the hog nose will have more attitude than the bull python, definitely.
I always, because I was thinking to myself, realistically, I probably only have space for one snake. And I was really weighing up between a hoggy or a royal python. And in my head, it was always a hoggy, because I absolutely love, I don't know if you know this account, but Marshmallow the hoggy.
Yes, of course.
Honestly, I've followed him for so long and I just love the snake. So I was always thinking it was going to be a hognose as my first snake. But then I have a friend who has a big exotics collection and I help look after them sometimes, like if he's going on holiday. And I held his royal python for the first time. And honestly, it was a really like weird feeling, because it just made everything go peaceful and quiet. And I felt so comforted. It was as if all the sort of negative voices and hustle and bustle in my brain just went silent.
Amazing.
And like, it was just incredible. And that genuinely made me think, I need a therapy snake.
Amazing. So it was like a sort of 3 foot long meditation.
Literally. Yeah. And I honestly can't explain it. And even now, so I decided I wanted to rescue a royal python, because there are a lot of, you know, royal pythons out there, and I wanted to sort of give one a good home. So I did a little bit of research once I persuaded my partner it was okay. And I came across a lovely lady. So ironically, she actually breeds mice, which is quite funny because snakes eat mice and rats. Yeah. But she had two snakes, and then she'd rescued this little pastel-pied python from some guy who basically never fed him. So he was really underweight. He was also covered in mites, and he was so weak because they'd been sucking all his blood.
Yeah.
And this really lovely lady, bless her, she took him in very temporarily just to try and get him away from the brink of death, essentially. And then unfortunately she couldn't keep him just due to finances. So she was trying to find a really suitable home. But once, you know, I saw him and heard the story, I was like, I really want to save Loki. That's the name of him. And she still gets updates, the lady, bless her, because she really does still care for him. And I just think it's lovely that I'm still able to share that with her. But when I hold Loki, again, I get the same magical feeling. Like, I genuinely believe he's good for my mental health. And I genuinely think as well, just animals in general are, because like even watering the trench is like, yes, it's a lot of pots and enclosures to open and put fresh water in, but again, my brain just switches off.
Yeah,
it's like absolute therapy, and I just love that. It's so wholesome.
Definitely. Yeah. Like, as I have ADHD, so my brain never ever switches off, and the only time I experience silence is when I'm with my animals. It's bizarre.
There's something about that love and care that you have to offer a little animal that just stops you being selfish. It's so altruistic in that moment. You're like, you only exist to make sure that that living thing is okay.
It's so weird, but it's amazing. If you're not someone who can be in silence naturally, to experience it is quite something.
It's scary at first when you're not used to it. Yeah. It's like, what is this?
I have music on constantly. If I'm not on my own, if I'm on my own, I will have music on. Even if like my partner is upstairs and I'm downstairs, I'll put music on. And I just find that like when I'm with my animals and I'm like with the reptiles, like, you know, spot cleaning or I'm feeding the tarantulas, I find myself having to put music on, and I'm like, it's just weird. It's so weird.
It's nice.
Actual therapy.
Yeah.
I love that you found something that can make everything quiet for you. It's lovely. Mm-hmm.
Definitely. And honestly, when I tell people I love animals, like, there's so many angles to it. It's not just like I love them, I want to hoard them, you know. It's not that. It's they really genuinely help me, and I want to help them. Like, nothing makes me happier than rescuing an animal.
So we've reached the section of the show where we'd like to invite you to nominate your a keeper that you like to celebrate. And then afterwards, or you can do it in any order you like, whether you want to end on a happy note or end flagging something off. It's entirely up to you. So you'd either like your shitty thing that you really can't stand and a keeper that you really want to celebrate. So whichever order you like.
So I think it's better to end on a high note, so I'll go for what I find shitty first. But I don't know if you guys have found this, but through my experiences in the hobby, I found that, especially to people who aren't in the hobby, there's like a stigma around what kind of person you should be if you're keeping tarantulas. Mm-hmm. So, for example, because I used to do beekeeping and I'm a qualified beekeeper, I would help at the local teaching apiary, and I remember one time mentioning that I was going to like one of the invert shows, and one of the people was literally like laughing, going, oh, so what kind of people is that? Just lots of like, you know, depressed goths or tattooed metalheads, you know, like they just had this preconception that if you keep tarantulas, that's what you have to look like. And that quite upset me, because there's no difference between keeping a dog or a tarantula. Like, obviously they need different care, but it's an animal.
Yeah.
And I've also found like people, they have like this idea that if you keep tarantulas or like, you know, weird exotic animals, that you must have mental health issues. Like, I've met quite a lot of people like that, which again can be quite upsetting. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it doesn't matter if I do or don't have mental health issues. It's just like, that is my hobby. But just like people choose to play an instrument or do sport, it's like I've chosen to do that as my hobby. So I think like I find that hard sometimes. And for a while, I was almost embarrassed to tell people that I loved tarantulas and like, yeah, that was my passion, which is quite sad in a way.
Yeah. So it's like a sort of, there's like a sort of lazy negative ignorance to just reduce you to something utterly dismissive. For something that's so important to you. Yeah, I understand that.
It's an odd one, isn't it? But a lot of subcultures are connected to people who are like subversive in some way. So like the alternative, you know.
Yeah.
And I can imagine if you aren't, I hate using the word alternative, it's so wanky. But if you're not an alternative person, presenting, it can make you feel a bit like you maybe like you feel out of place a little bit when you shouldn't have to at all, because it's a spider, not a metal album, you know.
And like I also, if you don't adhere to something that's considered to be normal, while you're abnormal or alternative, that's just shocking ignorance, isn't it?
It's
laziness.
Yeah, definitely. And like, and I think your connection with mental illness as well. People, like, there's that whole I don't even think it's this, the like, oh, you have to be mentally ill to own a tarantula. I think it's that people just can't connect tarantulas with normal people, so they have to connect them with people that must, I don't know how to,
they don't want to be associated with someone that does something that they associate with mental illness. They have to separate themselves from something that they consider to be oddball, because they don't want to think that people into oddball practices are as normal as they are.
Exactly. And I mean, obviously for me, I went through that phase of feeling awkward about it, but then actually when I started like my newest job, I sort of thought, you know what, this is me. And I had to sort of introduce myself to the whole company, and they asked a few facts, you know. It was like, oh, what was your previous job? Name three personality traits that describe you. And you had to share some photos and stuff. And I just straight up said, like, my biggest hobby is exotic animals, tarantulas. And one of the photos I shared was me holding a curly hair. I was like, you know what? I'm just going to be brave. I'm not going to hide who I am. And actually, it felt so empowering. And of course, you still get a few negative comments and stuff, or people will like make fun. But actually, what one really lovely thing came out of it, which was one of my colleagues asked if I could give her a malt that she could share with her two young kids, because they wanted to do a school project. And she came up to me the other day and told me that they proudly presented these malts and the fangs, and
amazing,
they'd helped, you know, to educate more kids that spiders aren't scary. And for me, I was like, you know what, all the haters can hate, but actually if I can change the perspective of maybe one or two kids to not be afraid of spiders, then I'm happy, you know.
Absolutely. Being a positive influence is amazing. It's such a joyous benefit of the hobby.
It really is. Like, moment, don't you, when people ask you, like, what are you into? And you know your first reaction is going to be, well, my animals.
Yeah.
And then people say, what animals? And it's almost like a moment, like, where you brace and you think, like, oh,
this is going to go one or two ways.
And it never, I rarely have someone turn around and go, that's amazing, tell me about it. It's always, oh, gross. And you're just like, would rather not talk about it, you know.
And it's like we said before, I think we discussed before, I absolutely fume when people say, oh, do you ever get them to fight? Or do you ever get to put them in together?
Yeah, it's like, no, I'm not abusing them, you know?
Yeah, exactly. It's like, I actually want to punch you. Really, it's like, you'd never say, do you ever get your dogs to fight?
Yeah.
Just wouldn't do it. It's the most off-putting thing anyone can say.
It really is, and it's just insensitive, isn't it? Like, it's like what we were chatting about earlier before we started recording, you know, just if you like some music, you know, if someone doesn't like it, it doesn't mean that they need to slag it off. Like, you know, I think it's just one of those things. But hopefully, you know, with the powers of social media, you know, hopefully we can educate more people to actually see them in a bit more of a positive light and actually normalize it a bit more. Yeah. And I'm sure you guys maybe get this as well, but if I'm doing like live streams, you'll get one or two people going, oh my God, why are you keeping them in a sandwich box? Like, you know, and it's like people who just aren't educated, and it can be really frustrating. But then I just try and remind myself, this is why I'm here. I'm here to educate. I'm here to spread the positivity rather than
knowledge. Yeah. It's a nice idea that you may well be able to educate somebody who is uneducated rather than ignorant, which is an amazing part of the hobby. You know, in many ways, all good keepers are ambassadors, aren't they, of the hobby?
Yeah, definitely. And I do get... Oh, sorry, Fee.
No, you go.
I was just going to say, like, I do occasionally get some lovely messages on TikTok from followers saying, like, I had one recently where she said, I never thought I'd get a tarantula, but I've ordered my first curly hair thanks to your videos.
Oh my gosh.
She, you know, she said she felt confident enough to do it, and she actually really admired these creatures now. And again, I get people, you know, just asking me, like, oh, is my setup okay? Or, oh, my tarantula's been hiding. You know, just being able to help them with their sort of questions. Like, I love that. I really do. And it's my dream. Like, honestly, if I could make a living from just helping others to give their animals better care and rescuing animals, then I could die happy.
Yeah.
It is nice. It's such a rewarding hobby in that way, isn't it? Yeah. To be able to make a living out of doing it would be amazing. But the privilege of having it as a hobby is fantastic, isn't it?
100% is.
So it's a big thumbs down to ignorant assholes then.
100%. So that's definitely like my shitty thing, I'd say. And then I guess on your positive note, in terms of nominating a keeper I really admire. So obviously there's a lot of really great keepers in the hobby, and like there's a lot of people I'd love to mention, but I would love to give my good friend Geen Exotics a huge shout out. So it was just by chance we really met, because he lives sort of nearby to me, and he has honestly inspired me and given me the courage to, you know, maybe get into species I was a bit nervous about. So like the Salmopeus or even like the pokies. Just sort of seeing his collection and working with him, he helped me sort of be like, actually, you know what? I can do this. This is still just a tarantula, and I've got the knowledge to, you know, handle it correctly. I'm not going to be reckless, you know, looking after it. But he's such a kind-hearted soul, and he's got a wonderful collection of animals, including over 10 snakes. He's got like a Burmese python who's 14 foot long. He's got beautiful tegu and lots of other lizards and reptiles, over 100 tarantulas. And I've learned a lot from him, really. So I think he deserves that massive shout out. Plus,
fantastic. I will definitely give him a mention as well, because I know I follow him because I've seen his posts, but I'm definitely going to have to enjoy reacquainting myself with all his animals. I don't think he doesn't seem to post massively often on Instagram, does he?
No, he's quite busy, obviously, when, you know, with all the animals, but he doesn't always have time to post. But when he does, it's really high quality content. And I think the thing that I've just always admired is, even when times are tough, you know, with the cost of living, he will always prioritize the animals. Like, he will make sure that their, you know, UV bulbs get replaced, or that they've got enough, you know, sort of enrichment in the enclosure or whatever it might be. And I just think that's really admirable, because it's so easy to just, you know, leave the animals and be like, oh, they're fine.
Yeah. It is.
Sorry, don't know if you could hear my dog bark.
Yeah.
I'll tell her
to be quiet.
She loves him.
I look forward to referring to myself. Check him out. Yeah, so we'll give him a shout on the podcast. Keeper of the Week, amazing.
Please do.
That's fantastic.
Sorry, I just wanted to add one last thing. He helped me, like, I say my first breeding project, although it's actually his, but it was the first tarantula pairing I did, and we actually bred the Teraposa sturmes, so the Goliath
burmeters. That was your first breeding project. Okay.
I can't say it was successful, though, because she literally ate the egg sac the day before we were going to take it out.
No!
Oh, no.
So absolutely gut-wrenching. And
oh, my God, that is heartbreaking.
It went really well, but I know it was honestly heartbreaking, because it's a beautiful, you know, species, and I have a soft spot for the mature male, because I had to rehouse him once while like my friend was away, because there was just a massive like mold outbreak, and he was so chilled. I've been told he was very bolty and skittish and nervous, and I should be prepared. Absolutely chilled. I absolutely adore him. So I was like, please make me some babies. Like, I want your successor. And then she ate it, didn't she? So
you just never know, though, do you? You don't know.
My agenic did the same thing about a week before I was gonna pull it. She ate it.
I've never no experience of breeding, and I've never it's not something I know anything about, but I can just imagine how heartbreaking it is to get so close to pulling the egg sac, and then that happens.
Because, yeah, people, it's so tempting to pull it early and then incubate yourself, and then you don't want to because it's best with mum. And yeah. then, yeah, the one with it, because I pulled, the first one I did was an NNC because it was easy. I just wanted to see if I could do it. And I pulled that one and incubated it myself after 20 days because I was like, I don't want to eat it, blah, blah, blah. And that went okay. But then the agenic, I was like, no, I'm going to leave her to like have it the whole time. And she bloody yeah. ate it.
It's frustrating. And like watching what the male went through, she tried to eat him 3 times. And oh. we were able to stop yeah. that just by using a paintbrush. But then for it not to work, I'm like, oh, come on.
Yeah.
That's got to be an amazingly bonding thing to do with a fellow keeper. That's...
I honestly felt very blessed afterwards because to me, I was like, actually, not only did I just witness how tarantulas pair in real life, because it's not something you see that often, but it's the king of all tarantulas. It's like the yeah. Goliath bird eater.
Now, I do always like to ask if there's anything that we haven't asked you or if there's anything you've wanted to talk about that we haven't covered. Is and you don't have to. There may not be anything, but is there anything you'd like to mention that we haven't?
I guess it was more a question for you guys, because... I have a tarantula species that I've never come across anyone else who has one. And Ooh. It just baffles me because even online, there doesn't seem to be much information. But it's called a Certophallus femoralis. It's CYRTOPHOLIS and then FEMORALIS. It looks a bit like a H. gigas in a way.
Oh, wow.
It's just like a brown tarantula. And I think I've named my Monty because it's a Montserrat tarantula. It sounded like a Monty. But like, I just found this species I'd never heard of at the IHS show, you know, like the reptile show. And never heard of these things. Couldn't find any information on them. And I've never found another keeper to have one.
I've never heard of it. I have to admit, I've honestly never heard of it.
It was described in 1903. Certophallus femoralis. Yeah. I've never heard of that.
We want to know if anybody else has got one, and what anybody else's experiences are.
Okay, one.
Because my one is very strange. Like, it's never molted in my care, and it doesn't show any signs of pre-molt. It's semi-fossorial, I'd say, and it likes high humidity. But then it'll randomly, run around the enclosure. And one time it was, literally chasing a cricket around the enclosure, like a Tom and Jerry. Like, it was really bizarre.
Was it trying to catch it, or was it just having fun?
I think it was having fun, because it didn't eat it in the end. So it's, I don't have any other tarantula that behaves like it. And, it's, you walk into the room, and if you hear, the legs running and tapping, you know it's Monty.
This is a proper enigma. I mean, this is amazing.
Where did you buy it from?
I have no idea. As I say, it was at a reptile show, and wow. It was just like a weird little stand selling snakes, and they just had 3 of the species. So I was like, oh, what is this? And all they could tell me was that, the predators are frogs and they like high humidity.
Well, I'm going to use this. If I'm going to use the phrase, I think it was the trailblazer.
Trailblazer. Love that.
What I'm going to do now is just find another brown tarantula. No, I'm joking. Cancelled. Any hoops?
That's amazing. I mean, that's a bombshell for the end.
Yeah.
By the way, I've got this only tarantula in the Western Hemisphere in captivity.
Yeah. Anyway, on that bright note.
Yes.
On that bombshell.
Emsy, thank you very much for joining us. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you so much for having me.
I just want to reiterate her social medias. So we've got invert_T, the letter T. So we've got invert_T_party on Instagram. And then TikTok, again, the letter T, invert T party on TikTok. If you can give Emsy a follow, that would be amazing.
Amazing, yeah.
And don't worry about following Rich, but definitely follow me. Actually, if you follow him, unfollow him.
Savage.
Savage. No, so we've got the tarantula family, innit?
Don't back up now.
Do you remember when you were just Rich Newell?
What?
Do you remember when you were just Rich Newell off of Rich Newell? Anyway,
The TV spot to shut off. Until next time, dear listeners, goodbye.
MZ, thanks very much for joining us. We hope to catch you soon.
Sounds great. Thank you.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye-bye.